Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is January 20th, 2026. I hope you all had a wonderful extended weekend for those of us here in the States who had off yesterday. And you know what? Every time I take a day off, something breaks. I joked about this on Friday. I said we're probably going to end up doing a spontaneous live stream on Monday. Well, that didn't happen, but something broke anyway. What's going on this morning, guys? We've got $95 silver. We've got $4,700 gold. Metals are ripping once again this morning, and it is no surprise why precious metals are ripping, because we've got stocks are way down. Bitcoin is way down. The market has gone risk off this morning. Typically, you see metals do very well during a risk off event like we're having right now. But here's the interesting thing, and this is what is special and unique about today in this risk off story that is playing out across markets, is bonds are down also. And bonds are typically a safe haven asset. You run to bonds during times of turmoil. Usually when markets melt down, we see bond yields crashing. That's not what's happening this morning. Bond yields are up almost worldwide. WTF, what is going on this morning? Japan, absolute meltdown in long-term JGBs, or Japanese government bonds. The Japanese 40-year bond yield is up 29 basis points to 4.225% this morning as of the last time I looked. Remember, guys, the inverse correlation. Bond yields rise when bond prices fall. We are seeing a bloodbath in Japanese bonds. It started yesterday, or while we were sleeping yesterday in Japan. There was a 20-year auction in Japan, and it didn't go particularly well, but it wasn't exactly a nightmare scenario. And as all the articles I read this morning were describing this sell-off in Japanese bonds, they said it was slow at first and then all at once. Well, isn't there a famous quote about going broke in the same fashion? Look, here's what's going on. Sanae Takeuchi is having her Liz Truss moment in Japan. And that's accurate. Remember Liz Truss, and remember the gilt crisis in 2022 in the UK, where Liz Truss came out with her new budget and she was like, I want to cut taxes and increase spending. And everybody was like, hey, the math doesn't work when you do that. Typically, if you want to cut taxes, you also have to cut spending. See, because the money's got to come from somewhere. See how that works? Well, she didn't last too long. Liz Truss was basically forced to resign shortly after that. Her minister of the exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng, he was out of there too. Sanae Takeuchi is having the same thing. She wants to start up the stimulus. She wants to, you know, helicopter money to all the people of Japan. And then she came out yesterday and said she wants to cut taxes on food products too. And I'm like, you know what? Great. Cutting taxes, I'm generally in favor of this. But when you cut taxes, you see, this is how funny the math works. When you lower taxes, you have less money. And so if you want to spend more when you have less, that means you need to borrow more. And when you need to borrow money, you got to go to this little thing called the bond market. And the bond market has a funny habit of throwing a freaking fit when you make plans to borrow too much. And that's what happened in Japan yesterday. The bond market threw a fit. Sanae Takeuchi is having her Liz Truss moment. Will this end the same way it ended for Liz Truss? We don't know yet. But for now, Japan just absolutely melting down. Now, I want to throw one word of caution in there. This is not the unwind of the yen carry trade that we saw in August of 2024. Remember that bloodbath on August 5th, 2024, when everybody was worried about the unwind of the yen carry trade. There are some similarities here. We did see a rise in Japanese borrowing costs during the yen carry trade panic in August of 2024. But the yen is not moving this morning. We're not seeing a sudden strengthening of the yen, which is indicative of people selling their investments in the U.S. and then trading those dollars for yen so they can go cover those debts in Japan. That's not happening. We are seeing a surge in the Swiss franc. That's the one safe haven currency that is behaving as expected this morning. But this is not the unwind of the yen carry trade. This could eventually spill over into that. If the Japanese borrowing costs keep going up, if the Japanese bond market keeps melting down, it could trigger another absolute mess of an unwind of the yen carry trade, or a disorderly unwind of the yen carry trade. But so far, that's not what's happening this morning. There are some people that will almost certainly be out there screaming about the yen carry trade this morning. Not what's happening, at least not yet. All right. Also going on in the bond market, that's Japan. And Japan is having the bigger move in the bond market. But we're seeing it too. And the Europeans are seeing it too. Because this Greenland bullshit is getting out of hand. All right. I thought we were friends. All right. Yeah. I have all kinds of criticisms of the Europeans and the WEFers and the globalists and, you know, Klaus or Hans or whatever his name is over there at the World Economic Forum. They all want us to eat bugs and ride roller skates to work. Yeah, I know. I know all that. But at the end of the day, I thought we were friends. This Greenland shit is getting out of hand here. President Trump, someone forgot to take away the president's phone over the weekend, especially at night. And when the president goes on Truth Social at night, fireworks tend to ensue. He has threatened 10% tariffs on all of Europe. Specifically Denmark, Norway, Sweden, France, Germany, the Netherlands, and Great Britain. 10% tariffs on all of these countries unless they sell us Greenland. And then those tariffs, effective February 1st, will go up to 25% in June if we haven't made a deal. Or at least that's what he's saying. He says a lot of things. He does other things. The bond market is starting to freak out over this, less so than we see in Japan, but we are seeing yields rise across the board, high single digit basis points, as the bond market is starting to worry that, okay, it's Liberation Day all over again. You guys may recall back in April of last year, a few days after Liberation Day, the bond market threw a fit. James Carville's famous quote, when he dies, he wants to be reincarnated as the bond market because the bond market intimidates everybody. That includes people like President Trump and Secretary Bessent, because when the bond market freaked out in April, they tacoed. That's the origin of the taco trade, was when they walked back tariffs on April 9th, just a week after Liberation Day. So we've got some worries about the Liberation Day thing coming back as well, driving bond yields higher this morning. So look, when the world freaks out, when money looks for a place to hide and bonds is no longer working, where does that money go? It goes to gold and it goes to silver. And I'm very relieved to see gold rallying this morning as well. One of the things that's made me a little bit nervous about this sudden ferocity of this silver rally was that it was kind of leaving gold in the dust. And I want to see gold keep up with it, because that tells me this move has more legs, that silver can continue rising if gold rises along with it. And we're getting that this morning. We are seeing the gold to silver ratio is still very low. It's below 50, but gold keeping up, that tells me it's a little bit healthier. That being said, guys, there's a lot of BS flying around in the precious metals world right now. A lot of fake information. Be careful. Keep your guard up. We'll talk about some of that as well. What else? We got other commodity stories. We got Venezuelan oil is finally flowing into the Caribbean. We've got copper is in backwardation this morning, kind of following the same playbook silver played last year. What else happening in commodities this morning? Natural gas, the widowmaker trade. Natural gas prices are ripping this morning, up high double digits. We've seen this before. Be careful chasing here if you're into that trade. There's graveyards are full of guys who thought they could trade natural gas futures around the weather. The Europeans are trying to figure out what they're going to do about the Greenland thing. They're threatening this anti-coercion law as a retaliation for tariffs and, you know, tariffs and taxes on tech companies. You know, all the things the Europeans already do. Look, I don't like what's going on with Greenland. I don't think we should just like muscle our way in there and take it. But at the same time, it's kind of adorable that Europe thinks they have anything that they could do to stop it. If the United States did decide they want to take Greenland, and I say they in the third person here because I don't want to go conquer Greenland. I'm not James Polk. I'm not like trying to bring back 5440 or fight or whatever the Latin longitude was. That being said, what's Europe going to do about it? A strongly worded letter? Seriously, there's nothing they can do about it. Also, what do we have? The PJM grid operator, Penn Jersey, Maryland. We talked about them late last week. They're out again. They have a new plan to deal with the surge of data center demand. Data center operators probably aren't going to like that one. We'll talk about that. And a surge of secondary offerings and continuation vehicles. It hit an all-time high, $226 billion worth of avoiding price discovery in 2025. That is what all these private equity firms are doing. Anything but finding out what their portfolio companies are actually worth. Remember, guys, the floor is price discovery. And we've got no price discovery in stocks. We've got no price discovery, certainly not in data centers and AI. No price discovery in commercial real estate. No price discovery in Chinese real estate. No price discovery in private equity firms and private credit firms. And, you know, in a world that really doesn't care about valuations and doesn't care about what the price is and the supply and demand is, it's just pump more liquidity in so number go up. It's hard to look at that and say when silver's going to stop. That's why it was very refreshing for me over the weekend. I did a Twitter space with George Noble. Thank you, George, for having me on. And Michael J. Kramer was talking before I went on, and he was talking about how there's no point in trying to forecast where silver is going here. I was so relieved to hear somebody else say that because the world has gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. We are divorced, entirely divorced from reality and charts and where things are going to go. So how do you guess? How do you guess where silver stops here? You can't. It's a fool's errand. Beware anybody who says they know where silver is going. Nobody does. Guys, we have got a lot to talk about once again this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Hey, don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back and have your wake-up juice with the melon heads because we do this every single business day. That is fuel for the fire right there. Well, right now, the S&P 500 is down 104 points, 1.5% lower. Stocks, they are selling this morning. The Dow, look at this, down 735 points ahead of the open, off by 1.5%. Are we going to be looking at a 1,000-point down day today, or are we going to be looking at the dip buyers show up in force at the opening bell? We're just going to have to wait. But the Dow getting clobbered here. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, off by 443 points, 1.75% lower. This is the worst day we have seen in stocks in quite a while. We'll see what happens when the bell rings. But for now, blood in the streets, folks. The dollar is down sharply lower, 52 basis points lower on the dollar here this morning. People are getting their money out of the U.S. But where are they going? That's the question. Where is it flowing to? Let's see if we can see where the money is flowing to because it ain't coming to the U.S. It ain't going to Japan. Where the heck is it going? Looking over at the bond market, you can see here yields on the long end of the yield curve up sharply this morning. The 30-year Treasury, 4.927%. That is up nearly 9 basis points. The 10-year yield, 4.283, up a more modest 5 basis points, but still a big move in the 10-year. The 2-year is actually down almost 1 point here at 3.591, and the 1 month is at 3.650, also down almost 1 point here. The long end of the yield curve is freaking out this morning. Real quick, guys, let's just scroll up here. You can see the UK is right behind it. Similar moves in the long-term UK gilt, 6 points, 5 points, 5.5 points. And let's scroll all the way up through here. Let's get to Japan, which is the big moves. We'll look at some of those charts. Look at these moves in long-term Japanese government bonds. The 40-year up 28 points. The 30-year up 30 points. The 20, 22 points. 15-year, 23 points. And a more modest move in the 10s. Long-term JGBs getting absolutely crushed here. This is going to hurt banks. This is going to hurt life insurance companies, hedge funds. Don't know what's going to happen here, but I can tell you somebody is losing a lot of money in Japanese government bonds right now. And of course, commodities. We have got a lot going on in commodities again. Let's start with February COMEX gold futures, 47.47. That is up by $152 just this morning, 3.3% higher. We're only about $5 off the intraday highs here. Gold is ripping here, and I like to see that move in gold because that tells me silver can keep going too. Spot gold at 47.43, just behind those February COMEX futures, up $65 or 1.4%. But look at the shiny here. We have got, let's start with spot silver, 95.22, up another 85 cents or 0.9%. It was up about $5 yesterday. We did have commodities markets were open yesterday while stocks were closed. That rally continuing this morning. March silver futures, 95.14, up $6.62, a 7.5% move in March COMEX futures. We're still in this wacky volatility in silver. I don't know where it's going. Is it going sharply higher? Are we going to 100? Probably. Are we going to 200? I don't know. 300? I don't know. Maybe we're going back to 50. Either way, guys, I just like the shiny. Copper is down 0.5%. We got more to say about copper in just a minute here. Platinum and palladium are up big this morning. A 4.5% move in platinum to the upside. Palladium right behind, up 3.5%. Crude oil up 0.8% here. 59.82 for March WTI futures. And something we don't often talk about, but take a look at this. Natural gas up 27.4% today. We have got bitter cold on the way here to the U.S. Guys, stay warm. It is going to be just miserable, miserable cold out for the entirety of the U.S. in the next few weeks. Shout out to my friends in Massachusetts. Oh, I hope you guys have got your natural gas thing sorted out over there. If not, I hope you got plenty of firewood chopped up because when it gets cold and natural gas prices go high, bad things tend to happen in Massachusetts in particular with the just cockamamie energy policy they have in that state. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, we're lower again. That is commensurate with a big risk-off move. $90,734 off by about $1,800. This sell-off in Bitcoin is now in its sixth day after hitting almost $98,000 a couple of days ago. All right, let's look at some of the silver charts just because it's just fun to look at. $95.30 shown here for silver. Again, guys, looking at daily candles, and I kind of drew a couple of lines here. These were a few days old. You can see this move in silver. It has steepened to the upside. This is indicative of a blow-off top here, guys, when you see these trades go vertical like this. And again, silver is normally a boring trade, right? When boring things get exciting, that's dangerous. And I want you to enjoy this move in silver. Stackers, you've been patient. You have gone through the price smashes and the price suppression and JP Morgan's and their spoofings trading. And a lot of this move is very well deserved. But be careful here, guys. All right. Don't forget to take profits along the way. Enjoy the ride, but be careful on leverage. People can also get wiped out during moves like this. We saw it in 2011 with the abrupt reversal. That could happen here. I don't know if it will, but it could. And I can also tell you guys, there are some things you need to watch out for. There's a lot of BS flying around. Before we do that, let's look at gold. And I like to see this move in gold here, all right? We got a nice big step up on this one-day candle in gold at 47.42. Gold, whereas the silver chart has been accelerating to the upside, gold is just kind of humming along here. And I like to see that. I like to see gold moving in an orderly fashion up and to the right. That tells me the move in silver might be a little bit more sustainable than it looked just a few days ago. So happy to see gold participating today. And the gold to silver ratio, even though we've got silver going wacky today, up $5-6, the gold to silver ratio is kind of hovering here at 49.8. We're below 50. But understand, guys, relative to gold, silver is now more expensive than it has been since 2011. Right, where can we go all the way back here? I'd have to set this to weekly candles here. Not since 2011 have we been, where are we? Yeah, here we go. 2011, we went as low as 30 on the gold to silver ratio. So silver could continue to outperform gold here for quite a while. But before that, you know, we spent most of the last 15 years actually above 65. All right, now we got to talk about some things you got to be careful about because I had a lot of people sent me this. Tagged me this over the weekend. Guys, you need to be careful here. I've seen so much outright BS about silver in the last few days. In particular, this account on Twitter, Silver Trade. They're saying the U.S. Mint nearly doubles Silver Eagle prices from $91 to $173. Oh my God, there's no silver anywhere. The world has run out of silver. Quick, panic buy. That's the message. This is bullshit, all right? And what happens here, where some of the most skilled liars take a small piece of truth and use that piece of truth to tell a great big lie. And that is what is happening with posts like this. Yes, they show screenshots. The U.S. Mint did dramatically increase the price of their American Silver Eagle 2025 1-ounce proof coins from $95 to $173, a huge hike for these proof coins. And these uncirculated 2024 Silver Eagles were jacked up 86%. Dramatic increase in prices at the U.S. Mint. Now, here's what this trade is not telling you, or here's what this Twitter account, Silver Trade, is not telling you, is that these are collectible coins. These are not bullion products, all right? These are numismatics, all right? when you see numismatic coin values going up, you know what that means for the silver price? Nothing. This has nothing to do with the price of silver, this dramatic increase in the cost of these proof coins. These are collector's coins, guys. And what they don't say, this what this silver trade account doesn't tell you, which just popped up on Twitter in the last couple of months, is that this Twitter feed is run by SD Bullion executives. Did you know that? Did all the people who are sending me silver trade tweets and tag me in silver trade tweets and all the people who are like, oh my God, look at this post. Did they realize that SD Bullion runs this account? They're not exactly upfront about it. They don't exactly advertise, hey, we represent the interests of bullion dealers, not the interests of retail metal stackers. They're not upfront about that. They don't advertise that. If you look at Silver Trade's account, it doesn't mention here, we're run by SD Bullion. No, it says your trusted source for precious metals news. This is sell side research in the precious metals industries, guys. This is not news. All right. And if you think I'm kidding, all right, look at what they're talking about here. Oh my God, $173 for these proof eagles. Well, take a look at SD Bullion's website right now. They are paying $92 for American silver eagles. More than $3 back of spot is what they're offering. While they're on Twitter screaming about $173 eagle proofs at the U.S. Mint, what they're not telling you is we're only offering $3 back a spot when we go to buy. If there really was a shortage, if there was no inventory anywhere, why would they be offering $3 back of spot for silver eagles, which is insulting, by the way, because there is no shortage. All right. They're trying to stir up FOMO demand. And I also saw all these videos going around over the weekend about, oh my God, you guys, the banks are gatekeeping silver. They're blocking transactions. They're not letting you get your money trapped in the fiat system. They're not letting you buy gold and silver. People are having their transactions canceled by their banks. Quick, go out and panic buy metals. Bullshit. All right. What's happening is banks are flagging transactions because right now there are grandmas out there being convinced to dump their annuities or to empty out their dead husband's pension and take all of their money and go buy freaking collectible coins where all their money is going to go up in smoke in the form of premiums, just like happened in 2021 during the first silver squeeze. And the banks are flagging those transactions to make sure people don't get ripped off. They're not gatekeeping to prevent the collapse of the fiat system so people don't go out and buy gold and silver, all right? I promise you, if you try to buy a little bit of gold and silver from some online bullion dealer, the bank is not going to block your transaction. If grandma tries to clean out her retirement fund, they will. Be glad they will. I want somebody to do that. If some scammer tries to get a hold of my parents' money too, I would hope that the banks would block that transaction instead of letting it go through first. So again, guys, there's so much outright FUD and BS around precious metals right now. Just be careful. Keep your guard up. Gold dealers are people just like anybody else. There are honest ones and there are sleazy ones. But even the honest ones, at the end of the day, remember, they are on the other side of the trade as you. Their interests are not aligned with yours. Don't let them use religion, patriotism, political interests, whatever. Don't let them use that to get you to let your guard down because these people are not your friends. All right, end of rant, end of soapbox rant. All right, let's also talk about this copper move because we've seen this before too. Spot copper prices spike on LME as traders tussle over inventory. This is exactly what silver did last year. Spot copper prices surged above later dated futures on the London Metals Exchange in a sign that traders may be moving to withdraw large volumes of stock from the bourse's warehouses. Copper contracts expiring Wednesday traded at a $64 premium to those expiring a day later in a condition known as backwardation that typically signals rising spot demand. The TOM next spread, that's the cost between tomorrow and the day after, was at a narrow discount on Monday, and the spike was among the largest ever seen in pricing records starting in 1998. The surge creates a fresh bout of turmoil in LME copper markets after a breakneck rally that lifted prices to record highs above $13,400 a ton earlier this month. Traders have been piling into the market as mines have faltered and a surge in shipments to the U.S. has drained copper supplies elsewhere, while many investors are betting on a jump in demand to power the burgeoning artificial intelligence industry. All right, forget about the crap in AI, guys. That beginning part, though, we have had issues with mines. There's some very high-profile mining accidents and geopolitical protests and nationalizations that have curtailed copper output. And at the same time, you have had a rush of metal leaving London, heading to the United States to front run potential tariffs on copper. All right, that is exactly what happened to silver and gold at the beginning of last year. All right, so what happens now? Global inventories are at sufficient levels for now, but much of the stock is held in warehouses in the U.S. after traders shipped record volumes there in anticipation of tariffs. The once-in-a-lifetime trading opportunity was fueled by a surge in copper prices on New York's COMEX exchange, but the recent spike in spot prices on the LME has left U.S. futures trading at a discount. All right, so last year in April or in March, we saw all the silver was leaving London, heading to the COMEX, because everybody was like, oh my God, they're going to put tariffs on silver, something we still don't have closure on, by the way. But all that metal flowed to the U.S. It drove GDP deeply negative in the first quarter as all the bullion came to the U.S. That inevitably resulted in a shortage in London, which caused that runaway move in silver prices in the fall and up to $3 in backwardation as the spot price in London, they began to run short of metal. And so the metal started flowing back from New York back to London in order to alleviate that shortage. We're seeing the same thing play out here in copper. All the copper left London to come to the U.S. because tariffs, that caused a shortage in London. Now they're in backwardation. The London price is higher than New York. Theoretically, we should see that metal start to head back to London now. This geopolitical strife and all of this worry about tariffs, guys, it's not necessarily causing shortage of metals. It's causing metal to be in the wrong place, localized shortages. There's plenty of metal in the world, but there's these invisible lines and tariffs between them that makes that metal hard to come by in certain locales. Also, beware the Widowmaker trade, guys. Natural gas futures are jumping 20%. It will be the toughest test in a decade, one analyst says. Natural gas futures skyrocketed on Tuesday in anticipation of a bitter cold stretch in the northeastern part of the U.S. The front-month contract for natural gas was up 20% to $3.71. The next 2 weeks look like they will present the stiffest test for northeastern heating, oil, and natural gas markets in nearly a decade, said Tom Close, an independent oil analyst, and comments on X. The National Weather Service said a frigid Arctic air mass will result in temperatures 15 to 25 degrees Fahrenheit colder than usual in the Northeast and the Midwest. Guys, with the wind chill, we're looking at double-digit negative temperatures coming up over the next week or so. And the outlook through the end of January also looks bitter cold. The cold spell upends what had actually been a tepid winter, which along with rising Appalachia and Permian gas production has driven what's still a 32% decline in natural gas prices from their December peak. All I can tell you guys is be careful. Natural gas trade makes fools out of people. And here's the article about what happened in Japan. Sudden Japan bond crash unleashes turmoil on trading floors. The selling in Japan's $7.6 trillion bond market began slowly and then seemed to hit all at once. What started as an unremarkable day on Tokyo trading desks quickly morphed into what several market participants described as the most chaotic session in recent memory. While concerns about Japan's fiscal position had been simmering for weeks, they suddenly boiled over on Tuesday afternoon with little warning, sending yields on some bonds to all-time highs. The rout left some hedge funds rushing to unwind losing trades, pushed life insurers to dump bonds, and caused at least one corporate bond investor to pull out of a multi-million dollar deal. Even as traders struggled to pinpoint an immediate catalyst for the sell-off, the overriding worry was clear. Prime Minister Sanae Takaichi's plans to cut taxes and boost spending are raising doubts about the financial health of one of the world's most indebted governments. This is basically the market pricing in a Liz Truss moment in Japan, said Masahiko Liu, senior fixed income strategist at State Street Investment. Yields on the country's 30 and 40-year bonds both jumped by more than 25 basis points, the biggest move since President Trump's Liberation Day tariffs rattled global markets last year. So let's look at some of these charts here. First of all, the 10-year JGB, big moves. I mean, look, the last couple of days, big moves in the 10-year JGBs. You don't want to see sovereign bonds moving like this. That being said, 8 basis points relative to what's happening elsewhere in the Japanese bond market. This is a quiet move, believe it or not. These two big candles are quiet moves. Also, the 10-year JGB, the yield has come down from its highs. So we are seeing prices recover a little bit here, emphasis a little bit. That being said, Look at the 40-year. Yikes. 27 basis points higher. At one point, it was almost 29 points higher. This is a bloodbath in bond markets. And again, when you see yields rising like this, guys, this is bond prices collapsing. And let's just zoom out. Look at what borrowing costs in Japan have been doing for the last 3 years, guys. They're just going up in a straight line. And, you know, the move, it's getting more and more violent. So be careful here. Borrowing costs rising in Japan. A lot of U.S. asset prices have been bid up with borrowed money from Japan, where it's historically been very cheap to borrow money, and you've got Forex moving in your direction. Now, that being said, we are not seeing the unwind of the yen carry trade. This is USD JPY, the number of yen it takes to make $1, one-day candles we're looking at here. And again, not a big move happening in the yen here. All right, if this was the unwind of the yen carry trade, we would be seeing these big red candles down. Not happening here, right? Like if you see what happened back in August 5th of 2024, this was the yen carry trade unwind panic. That is not what's going on here today. So as for now, the yen is not sending any big warning signals, just borrowing costs rising. So you got money is leaving the yen, or not leaving the yen, money is leaving the Japanese bond market, money is leaving the US bond markets, the European bond markets, it's leaving the dollar, it's leaving stocks. Where is it going? Besides gold and silver, it's going to the Swiss franc. The Swiss franc is behaving as a safe haven asset this morning. USD CHF is down. The number of Swiss francs it takes to make one US dollar, that one is down. And by the way, the Swiss franc has been plumbing these lows since pretty much the middle of July, threatening to break down from those levels here. And you can also see CHF. JPY, this is the number of yen it takes to make one Swiss franc. You do see the yen actually losing value versus the Swiss franc right now, just not versus the US dollar. So the Swiss franc is the one safe haven asset along with gold that's doing what it should. Now, another thing causing this turmoil in the bond markets is this Greenland story that's just getting increasingly ridiculous by the day. Trump vows tariffs on 8 European nations over Greenland. Hey, look, it'd be great if the United States got bigger. Greenland, you want to come to the party? Come on over. But I don't think they want to. All right. I think they get a choice. I think that's how the world is supposed to work. President Donald Trump on Saturday vowed to implement a wave of increasing tariffs on European allies until the United States is allowed to buy Greenland, escalating a row over the future of Denmark's vast Arctic island. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said additional 10% import tariffs would take effect on February 1st. On goods from Denmark, Norway, Sweden, France, Germany, Netherlands, Finland, and Great Britain, all currently subject to tariffs imposed by Trump. Those tariffs would increase to 25% on June 1st and would continue until a deal was reached for the U.S. to purchase Greenland, Trump wrote. The president has repeatedly said that Greenland is vital to U.S. security because of its strategic location and large mineral deposits, and has not ruled out using force to take it. European nations this week sent military personnel to the island at Denmark's request. And that's just adorable, as if Europe sending military personnel to Greenland, like, oh no, please don't. Look, I don't want us to take Greenland, certainly not by force. That being said, if we decide to, Europe, there's nothing you can do about it. It just isn't. That's how that works, right? You spent the last 30 years letting your own militaries decay into nothingness because the United States had your back. And so you're like, no, we don't need to spend money on our militaries. Well, now you don't have one, which is why if we decide to take Greenland, which I hope we don't, but if we do, there's nothing you can do about it. And it's adorable, though. They'll certainly try. Here is this very unhappy looking millennial European woman just trying to figure out. She's got all the flags in the background. We're going to figure out how to punish America. Oh, that's right. We have no leverage. EU finance ministers discuss trade tool against U.S. threats. European finance ministers are discussing using the bloc's anti-coercion trade instrument and other economic countermeasures following U.S. President Trump's announcement of new tariffs over the Greenland dispute. We do not want to escalate this, but if others keep on escalating, then there will need to be a European answer, said Danish Economic Affairs Minister Stephanie Loos, no pun intended there. Reporters in Brussels on Tuesday ahead of a meeting with her counterparts. We don't rule out anything at the moment. I don't know, maybe don't have your, if you're going to get into a trade war, maybe don't have a woman named Loos run your trade war for you. I'm just going to throw that out there. Some of these jokes write themselves. While tariffs damage both the U.S. and the EU economies, let's start that over. While tariffs damage both the U.S. and EU economies and should be avoided, finance ministers will talk about the possible use of the EU's trade tool and other countermeasures to be put in place if needed, she added. Trump announced 10% tariffs, blah, blah, blah. Let's see, where is it? They talked about it here. While the EU's trade tool has never been used, it was designed primarily as a deterrent and, if needed, to respond to deliberate coercive actions from third countries that use trade measures as a means to pressure the policy choices of the EU or its members. Those measures could include tariffs, new taxes on tech companies, or targeted curbs on investments in the EU. In other words, things that they're already doing, they might do those things. It could also involve limiting access to certain parts of the EU market or restricting firms from bidding for public contracts in Europe. Okay, look, there's nothing they can do about it. All right? Europe has no economic leverage over the United States. Anything they do to us will hurt them more than it hurts us. Yes, they can inflict pain on the United States by punching themselves in their own testicles, but that's ill-advised because it hurts to do that to yourself. That being said, what's going to calm this stupid thing down? It's going to be the bond market, all right? The bond market will settle this dispute for us because everybody answers to the bond market one way or another. So if the bond market decides that they want to sell off and send yields on the U.S. 10-year note 15, 20 basis points higher in a sudden fit, then watch how quickly this dispute over Greenland will get settled, like overnight. It's not going to be this lady named Luz. I can tell you that settles it. We also got 3M earnings this morning. I don't want to spend a lot of time on 3M earnings, guys. They were good. They beat expectations, but 3M stock is down because every stock is down this morning, off by 2.9%. We've got Venezuelan oil moves into the Caribbean as U.S. trade links are forged. Venezuelan oil is moving. The interesting thing about this, and again, we're running a little short on time here, so I don't want to spend too much time on this, but the one thing I noticed was with this Venezuelan oil is that they're using shadow fleet tankers. They even mentioned in one part of this here that some so-called dark fleet tankers laden with Venezuelan crude have turned on their transponders as they prepare to offload their oil in the Caribbean. All right, they're going to St. Lucia. They're going to Curacao. This is the U.S. is letting the Venezuelan oil flow, provided it flows where we want it to flow, and they're even letting the dark fleet or the shadow fleet, all these sanctioned tankers, we're even letting them carry it, and they're even willing to turn on their transponders and give away their position as long as the oil goes where we want it. Again, this whole thing in Venezuela, you know, you don't hear a lot about narco terrorists anymore, do you? But you do hear a lot about oil almost every day, don't you? That's interesting that it works that way. But this is the carrot, guys. Well, you know, we gave him the stick, cruise missiles, your president disappears in the middle of the night. Here's the carrot. Your oil can begin flowing again. All right. It's no holds barred geopolitical foreign policy, but there it is. That's what it is. This is another interesting story to keep an eye on here, guys. PJM unveils plan to tackle AI-driven power demand surge. And the AI guys and the power generators, they're not going to like this one. Grid operator PJM Interconnection on Friday unveiled plans to manage surging power demand from data centers that big tech needs for its artificial intelligence expansion, hours after the White House urged emergency action to prevent potential blackouts. PJM Connection said its plans to require new large power users to either bring their own power generation or enter into a connect and manage framework subject to early curtailment. Let me put that into plain English. There's not enough power on the grid to handle these stupid data centers. It just isn't. We haven't built any new power plants in years. All right. So either build your own power plant if you want to build a data center, or sign this piece of paper. And this piece of paper says, if it gets too cold or too hot in the summer, we're going to turn off your power and there's nothing you can do about it, because we're not going to let people's homes lose their air conditioning or lose their heat in the wintertime because of your stupid chatbots. So they're basically saying, the PJM, the biggest grid operator in the country, saying we don't have enough juice. And so if you're going to connect to the grid, we reserve the right to switch you off at any time we determine, because there's just not enough power. The PJM board said the plan includes proposals to be filed directly with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Changes to PJM's policies and procedures that can be implemented immediately and proposed stakeholder processes to inform the board about complex but equally urgent issues. In other words, the regulators have our back. If we need to throw the switch, we will. This is not a yes, no to data centers. This is how can we do this while keeping the lights on and recognizing the impact on consumers at the same time, said CEO David Mills, PJM board chair and interim president. Now, that speaks to the power problems, guys. Let me just mention the Eisman playbook. Steve Eisman of Big Short fame did an interview with a guy named Gary Marcus over the weekend. I highly recommend that Steve Eisman, Gary Marcus interview about the limitations of large language models, about how this experiment has failed, about how even Ilya Sutskever, one of the founders of OpenAI, he has said it's basically back to the drawing board now. Pretty profound stuff in that interview with Gary Marcus over the weekend. Highly recommend you check that one out. And that's besides the fact that there's no power to run these things. There's also no reason to keep running these things because they didn't accomplish what they promised us they were going to accomplish. And I just want to say thank you very much. Where's my shrink? Oh, we already shrank. Okay, no, I got to do this one. Well, sorry, it's been a long weekend. Thank you very much to the Nacho Man for supporting the channel. He says, thanks to all the great Melonheads for the knowledge and community. Been stellar year with all your help. It has been a pretty good year, Nacho Man. I agree. Thank you very much. 2026, gonna be even better. Congratulations, sir. And thank you for supporting the channel and for the kind words. Citrus Mo, what's going on, you orange SOBU? He says, outside of the AI hype bubble, do you see a future where SMRs are co-located with data center clusters? I appreciate you and your work on this channel. Spent a lot of time talking about SMRs over the weekend with George Noble on that Twitter Spaces. Yes, I do see a future for SMRs. I'm gonna say co-located with data centers, that's irrelevant. Maybe not. Data centers, they're never going to go away because every website, everything, Netflix, it all runs on data centers anyway. So data centers are going to stick around. We have built too many data centers. We are going to have such a glut of data centers as soon as this bubble bursts that the things are going to be selling. Like, they're going to be turning these things into like freaking urban air, like trampoline parks for kids to jump around in because they have these big giant buildings with nothing to do with them because they've just built too many of them. That being said, SMRs and that technology, I do believe strongly in that technology. I think we should be developing them. I think it's cleaner and it is safer than any other form of energy available. That being said, expecting SMRs to be built in the next 1, 2, even 5 years and connected to the grid, powering homes, is not a reasonable expectation. The nuclear industry does not operate at that speed, not even close. It's just not going to happen. Beware of anybody claiming otherwise. They're selling you snake oil. Thank you, Citrus Mo, for supporting the channel. Blaine Cole, 5452, says, safe haven, fiat currency, non sequitur. Look, the Swiss franc is generally viewed as a safe haven. Now, there are concerns about Swiss banks and what might happen to the Swiss franc if the Swiss banks don't do so well. Remember Credit Suisse? Things didn't go so good at Credit Suisse. And UBS bought Credit Suisse, and now UBS has inherited their problems. So, you know, if the trouble in the Swiss banks were to come back, the Swiss franc probably would not look like a safe haven, because what would the Swiss central bank do? They'd probably print francs to bail out their bank. So that being said, yeah, it's a little counterintuitive, a fiat currency acting as a safe haven, but it is. This the franc is viewed as a safe haven, and it's the only safe haven functioning the way it should, with the exception of gold this morning. Gold and the franc, the bond market is not acting as a safe haven asset this morning. Be careful, guys. A lot of historical correlations breaking down here. Thank you, Blaine Cole, for supporting the channel. Learcy, you know him, says Trump needs some good advisors with a spine. You know, I was talking with Mish this morning. How'd you like to be Scott Bessent? How'd you like to be the guy who's got to go out there and somehow restore calm in bond markets by talking reasonably, by projecting calm and strength when the president is on Truth Social the night before at 1 a.m. in the morning? I do not envy his job whatsoever. I agree. He needs advisors with a spine, and he needs advisors with ethics, to be honest with you. I just see the kleptocracy is getting out of control. It was out of control under the last guy. It is getting worse under this guy. I don't know what to tell you guys here. I mean, all I can tell you is gold is running and silver is running for a reason here. And, you know, I don't want to go out and buy silver at $95 an ounce. I'll be honest with you. I bought silver at 60. I bought some at 60. At 95, I look at that 2011 chart and I say, I'm not sure I want to buy here. That being said, what else am I going to do with my money? Am I going to leave it in U.S. stocks in this silly bubble? I don't have a lot of good answers here, guys. But I can tell you, it's more important to avoid losses than it is to chase gains, right? That's the one thing I'll tell you. Losses are more powerful than gains. If you lose 50% of your money, you need to make 100% to break even, all right? So always keep that in mind during times of turmoil or during times of just absolute wacky in markets with the avoidance of price discovery. Losses are more powerful than gains. Your first priority should be protecting your principal. Thank you very much, Clearcy, for supporting the channel. T.A. Chapman says, we are worried about inflation during the GFC, but it never really happened because so many people lost jobs and everything was already too expensive. Do you think we run into that again? We were very worried about inflation. I can tell you, number one, we were in an asset bubble. So we had a liquidity event and we had a correction in asset prices, very deflationary events. When people's homes go down in value, people feel less wealthy and they spend less money. So that caused consumer price deflation. 2008 was massively deflationary. We also had some very significant historical deflationary events happen right around the same time as the GFC or within a few hours. You had the U.S. shale boom, the biggest discovery or unlocking of energy reserves that we had seen in 50 freaking years. Massively deflationary. We had the trend of globalization, the Amazon effect, e-commerce going mainstream. That put massive downward pressure on prices everywhere in the world. So it wasn't just the GFC. We also had these isolated events that were very deflationary happening at the same time. And I think that masked a lot of the currency debasement that was being used in order to pay for the bailing out of the banks and the avoidance of price discovery. I think without those things, without the shale oil boom and without the Amazon effect and the globalization of and e-commerce and outsourcing, which was also very deflationary, I think without those things, we probably would have seen a lot more inflation in 2010, 11, 12 than we actually did. So, you know, it's important to keep in mind those other factors as well, TA. Good point, though, sir. And hey, thank you as well for the 10 Nobody Special memberships. Welcome, you new baby melons. Appreciate the support of the channel, T.A. Chapman. You new guys, be sure and say thank you to T.A. in the comments. That was very nice of you, sir. And a reminder, if you use those free super chats that you get once a month with your Melonhead membership, I will read and respond to your comments live on the air. Nacho Man is round-tripping revenue with my buddy Mish. Once again, thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. Appreciate the big old pink ones, sir. And there is Mish with the 20 memberships. I think that's 40 now, Mish. That's a couple now in a row. Thank you very much, Mish and Nacho Man, for your circular financing deals. We're going full core weave with the channel revenue now. Madison Hype says, 2025 all-time best moment was Leather yelling. Thank you. Oh, do we have to? Do you think the best moment of 2025 was when the bond market bent over Scott Bessent and basically I was his dominatrix, the physical domination? Yes, you will say, thank you, ma'am. May I have another? And Scott Bessent is my slave to the bond market. Whatever the bond market wants, the bond market gets. Secretary Yellen, please. I really, the visuals here, you know, it's a family show for crying out loud. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. I wasn't ready for Janet in leather today. All right. I don't think really one can be prepared for Janet Yellen in leather, no matter how, nor would you want to be. Why don't we move on? Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. Uncle Fedster, moving on with all available haste. He says, comment on T.A. Chapman's question. Money supply grew between 3.3 and 10% 2009 to 2020. Corresponds with 1.1 to 3.3% inflation. Hanky's rate. Interesting. I can't scrutinize the 3.3 and 10% annual growth rate. I'll take your word for it. But it is interesting that corresponds to inflation. I would also point out, guys, we've got the money supply is still growing. The money supply has never stopped growing. For a very short time, the money supply shrank in 2022 and early 2023. It led to bank failures and then the Bank Term Funding Program and the onset of the dovish monetary policy tilt at the Fed. Even while QT was continuing after that, the money supply was growing. Growth in money supply is a prerequisite for inflation, and that money supply growth has not slowed. If anything, it's probably going to accelerate here now that the Fed is pumping liquidity into the bond market. What are they calling it? RMPs, reserve management purposes, or reserve management purchases. It's not money printing. They're reserve management purchases. We're buying reserves to manage them with printed money, but it's not money printing. Remember, they're calling it something totally different. Good point there on the correlation between money supply growth and inflation. Appreciate that, Uncle Fedster. Oh, guys, it's gonna be a heck of a morning. Let me just real quick see. Did the dip buyers show up at the open? A little bit, but not a lot. Dow still down 700 points. So no, it looks like no dip buying for now. We may be back later today. We'll see. We'll see what the market does once it's had a chance to digest this ruction in the bond market. But until then, till next time, thank you so much, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Thank you for all the super chats. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you so much, guys. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithms on the way out. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.